curious how you could help improve the health and well-being of your staff? Get insights, cost savings opportunities, and disease prevention at your fingertips with Springbuck Health Data Analytics. Learn more at springbuck.com.
My name is Allison Melanchthon, and I moved to Indiana from Colorado in 1983. I've never looked back. I love living in Indiana, and I love being a Hoosier.
It's a long way from the Rocky Mountains to the amateur sports capital of the world. But Allison Melanchthon was destined to wind up in Indiana. Her love of sports and strong work ethic began as a little girl skiing with her dad in Maine.
I remember my dad saying, "Don't be afraid of hard work. Hard work is a good thing." Over the years, there's been a lot of hard hills with the different things that I've done. And I always think about that, sidestepping up the hill and then, you know, getting to the top and skiing down.
For nearly 40 years, she's been a driving force behind the biggest sporting events to ever take place in Indianapolis. Final Fours, national and world championships, Olympic trials, and perhaps the crown jewel, Super Bowl 46. Allison Melanchthon switched lanes 7 years ago, taking the wheel as senior VP of entertainment at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. East Coast by birth, now a Hoosier for life. Driven, hardworking, compassionate, humble, and a role model. A woman who has helped generate billions of dollars for the state. Get to know Allison Melanchthon on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast. Hello and welcome to the Business and Beyond podcast, presented by PNC. I'm Gary Dick. Allison Melanchthon was born in Lobster Country in the small city of Auburn, Maine. As a little girl, she fell in love with gymnastics, went on to compete in college at Colorado State University. Allison moved on to an executive role at the Indiana Sports Corporation, where for 20 years she was the brains behind Indianapolis successfully hosting Olympic trials, Big Ten basketball tournaments, and NCAA Final Fours. Perhaps her biggest win, serving as a driving force in landing the 2012 Super Bowl in Indianapolis, and then going on to lead the city in successfully pulling it off. For the past 7 years, Allison has planned and executed events at the world's largest spectator sporting facility, serving as senior VP for Penske Entertainment at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and I am pleased to be joined on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast by Allison Melanchthon. Allison, always great to be with you. How are you?
I am great. Thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. Well, you are always nonstop, always busy. Your most recent venture, as I mentioned now, with Penske Entertainment and the IndyCar series winding to a close as we are recording this episode of the podcast. You have one event left on the schedule. Talk about this year, how it's, you know, as an outsider, it seems like the series has gone very well with all of the challenges of the pandemic and all of those other various challenges. Seems like this year has gone pretty well.
Yes, this year has actually gone extremely well. We've had incredible growth in all of our television metrics and our social metrics, lots and lots of partner and sponsor interest. Number of great entries in the Indy 500 and throughout the whole series this year. So IndyCar is definitely on an upswing, which is very exciting after last year, as most sports and entertainment grind to a halt. But this year, we have rebounded and can't wait for 2020 when we have no COVID impact at all. This year, we had to move a couple of the races. We didn't have our race in Toronto, but looking ahead next year, it's going to be smooth sailing. And this year for the Indy 500, we had 40% attendance based on the county protocols. And we're looking forward to next year having 100% attendance. This year, even though we were only 40% attendance at the Indy 500, we were still the largest spectator event in the world. So that was something that we were very proud of.
Hey, I wondered what that was like, because Indianapolis, as you well know, because you're so actively involved in it, does such a world-class job of hosting these big events. So, the entirety of March Madness this year, of course, Indianapolis and Bloomington and Lafayette, but primarily Indianapolis pulled it off. Was there a bit of pressure because there was a lot of attention on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, more so than normal, because of the fact that it was going to be and was the largest spectator event to be held since the pandemic. Was there, what was that the feeling like as you were entering into the process?
You know, you're right. We had pressures from all over, and it started with making sure we delivered what we promised to the city and the state here in the county by protecting our patrons and making sure they stayed safe. And then nationally, we were the first event that came out of the COVID, you know, post COVID, and we knew that we had lots and lots of leagues and events and concerts and everyone looking at us. It's interesting. Our TV rating for the Indy 500 was the highest it's been since 2016 when we had the 100th running. And I do think a lot of that where people were curious. You know, the world is opening back up, and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indy 500 are leading the world opening up. And what is that going to look like? So our TV rating was great. And, you know, we want to make sure our drivers and the people that are in our paddock that then had to go to all the other races were protected. So we felt like there was a lot of pressure on us, but we have a great team here. And frankly, we basically had flawless execution. We didn't have any big hiccups from it. So it was something we can look back on and be very proud of.
Yeah. You mentioned the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. That's what got you to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, right?
Yes. Mark Miles called me and said, you know, the single biggest sporting event in the world is right here in your hometown where you're living now. And we have the 100th running coming up in 2016. And would you consider a move to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway to lead all of that planning? You know, I jumped at it because I love racing. Ever since I moved here in 1983, I've followed racing. And to be a part of a historic event, there's not many events on the planet that have been run 100 times. And to have an event that's 100 times in the same location, and with my career and all the different events I've done all over the world, it seemed crazy. I hadn't actually worked on the world's largest sporting event. So I made the leap, and I have loved it. It's been great. And the 100th running, the morning of the 100th running was as special as the day we opened the Super Bowl Village to me because of how much work and effort from not just myself, but the whole team. And we sold that event out for the first time in the Indy 500 history. So that was, it was great.
Was there any, and I talk about pressure, any added pressure on that event? Obviously an iconic event or a milestone, if you will, but just the history, the heritage, obviously, of the Indianapolis 500, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway here in Indiana, and what a special place it is to so many people, that made that event and that milestone, to me anyway, even more special.
Yes, it absolutely was. And we lifted the attendance number in 2016 to a sellout, but then we've maintained much of that lift since then. And that was the goal, to use the 100th running as a new bench setter for the event going forward, for concerts and entertainment. It's interesting, 80% of the people that come to the Indy 500, our demographic information shows 80% of the people that come not because of racing. They come because they're looking for, they're epic event seekers. They're looking for a bucket list event. They're looking for an amazing event to participate and be a part of. And 20% come that are race, you know, hardcore race fans. So we've got to make sure we're catering to that 80% in addition to the 20%.
Hey, want to talk about your background and even before arriving in Indianapolis in 1983 and I had no idea you grew up in Maine, so I've learned something already. But want to talk about another big event that you're involved with coming up for Indianapolis, and that's the College Football National Championship, which is such a mega event. What a coup for Indianapolis to get it. As you look at that event, does that present in a sense, and again, coming out of the pandemic, all of the challenges there and challenges that the hospitality sector has faced, really to me kind of presents Indianapolis with an unbelievably unique opportunity to shine once again on a national, really a global stage?
Yeah, this is a major event, and it hasn't been around as long as the Super Bowl, but the College Football Championship is a major event. They've got all the right people organizing it. Susan Boffman is incredible. Mark Howell, as the chairman of the board, is incredible. And it is going to be a remarkable event that people can really enjoy. And as you said, coming out of the pandemic, it's important to show the rest of the world what Indianapolis is made of. And that's going to be right out of the gate post-COVID in January. And I know the two teams that end up here are going to have an exceptional experience, better than any other city they've ever been in for this event. So I'm thrilled to be on the board and supporting Susan as she's putting all of it together. But it is really going to be special.
Want to go to break here in a minute, but I have to ask you, and I know you've been asked this question probably many times in different forms, but the track record of Indianapolis for hosting events, from the volunteers to every element of hosting, no matter what the event, be it a Final Four, an Olympic Trials, whatever the case might be, a Super Bowl. What's the secret sauce? Why does Indianapolis, you have the physical connectedness of downtown, obviously, and the venues, but what is it that makes Indianapolis such a special place for these big events?
You know, since day one, when we held our first event, 1978, I think, National Sports Festival, it has been, the key is the civic engagement of people. And that has been consistent through all these years since back then. You can't run a major event like the Super Bowl, like any of the Olympic trials, like the College Football Championship game, without civic volunteers coming forth and saying, I will lead an area, I will be accountable, I will contribute, I will volunteer my time, I will loan my brain and all my good thinking and my critical thinking to the planning. Other cities don't have that. And I know that as a fact, because I traveled around the country with the Sports Corporation and then with the Super Bowl. I worked eight Super Bowls prior to the one that we had and participated in those. And other cities don't have what we have in that our civic citizens care so much about these events, they're willing to give their time to help put our best foot forward across the board. And that is the secret sauce that we have.
And you mentioned the volunteers, the grassroots volunteers, and typically events are oversubscribed when it comes to volunteers. You know, there are so many people who want to engage and take part of it. But it's also, at least from my perspective, the leadership. You're a prime example, but you know, Sandy Knapp and Jack Swarbrick and Mark Miles and Jim Morris and Ted Bowman. You can go on down the list over the course of the last, 40 plus years, and that executive leadership and willingness to participate has to be a big part of it too.
Yeah. And the character of those people that chose to step forward and lead in all these different sporting events, you know, they are all collaborators. You look at all that group of people and their strengths are collaborating with others, pulling people together, setting a vision, and then getting people to follow it. So the character and integrity of the leaders that have stepped forward to lead these events is stellar. And again, I think that's something really special about us. And it started a long time ago, starting with Ted Boehm, and Jim Morris and Michael Browning, and then Sandy Knapp. There's no one like Sandy Knapp in the whole country. She is remarkable. And, you know, frankly, she's one of the reasons I moved here. I met her and stars in her eyes about Indianapolis. I was living in Colorado. And when she talked about this city, her eyes lit up. And she said, if you want to do something in sports, you better move to Indianapolis, because that's where it's happening. And she was that direct about it. And I didn't even know her. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll listen to her. And then I did it. So it's interesting. She was a Pied Piper of so many things.
Yeah. Well, we want to talk about that. What attracted you? And I think we got a little sneak peek at that. What attracted you to Indianapolis back in the early 80s? Also, Allison Melancton, the young years growing up in Maine, gymnastics career, big focus on sports, and a lot more. That's when the Business and Beyond podcast returns.
Imagine a world where every healthcare and benefits program decision is backed and guided by data. Springbuck is the health data analytics solution that equips you with the insights and expertise you need to sharpen your benefits strategy, advance employee health, and contain costs. Springbuck, a world of actionable health intelligence insight at your fingertips. Visit springbuck.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week is Allison Melancton, Senior Vice President for Penske Entertainment at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And Allison, so many things you have accomplished here in Indianapolis, arriving here, I think, in 1983. But go back even further to give people maybe a little insight into the early days of growing up in Maine. Again, I didn't know you grew up there. So a small town in Maine, what was growing up like for Allison Melancton?
You know, Maine is a fabulous state. My entire family, my mom's family, my dad's family, everyone is in Maine. And when I decided to leave Maine and go to Colorado, it was very difficult because my whole family was there. We have a very tight family, but I wanted to try something new. But back in Maine, you know, incredible country. We did so many things outdoors. It's very outdoorsy there. You know, very, very small town. I knew everybody. And you know, I would say that the integrity of the people there is amazing. The work ethic is amazing. My dad owned a small business, and people there help each other out. And it was, I don't know, I hate to say this, but I think I had a storybook upbringing. It really, yeah. It really was fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I assume that's because you're certainly recognized for your work ethic, the fact you are a hard worker. And I'm sure that it really dates back to those early days growing up in Maine.
Yeah. You know, my dad was a national level ski jumper. Ski jumpers Wow. are a little bit crazy. Yeah. Don't know that. And he would drag us around to his competitions, my sister and I, when we were little. And it was remarkable watching how hard, you know, people were training and working. And then I started watching people that were organizing the ski jumping events. And I was very interested that, gosh, these people have jobs organizing skiing events. So that's when I first started, you know, piqued my interest in sports management. But my dad taught us to ski early, and he taught us discipline. You know, we would sidestep, if you know what that is in skiing, we would sidestep all the way up the hill. And he was important for him to teach us the discipline of getting your legs strong, the discipline of learning how to do it right. And then you get the thrill of skiing down. And then you'd sidestep up and work and work and work and work. And then you get the thrill of skiing down. So, you know, those lessons, I think, taught me, you know, effort equals results. And if you do all the right planning and you do all the right preparation and prepare yourself well, you can do just about anything.
Yeah. So obviously sports, a big part of your upbringing. You mentioned the skiing, but you became a quite accomplished gymnast, right? How did that happen?
I had the most amazing gymnastics coach in this little town in Maine. He really was one of my heroes, and I still talk to him today. I just saw him again last year. He had a sort of great discipline about him in effort equals results. So I trained there from, gosh, I don't know, I was young, I don't know, maybe 10, and then stayed with him all the way through high school. And then I went to college and competed at Colorado State University. And again, was blessed to have a wonderful gymnastics coach, Sheila Walker, who, you know, really invested, both those coaches really invested in me as a person, not just the gymnastics part of me. And actually, it's funny, this last year I was home visiting, and I saw my grade school high school gymnastics coach, and he showed me my high school picture that I had given him and written throughout the frame. He had found it. And I said, you know, thank you for caring more about me as a person than as a coach, because I feel like you taught me so much about life. And he did. And so did Sheila Walker. So while my gymnastics career was really important to me, the people that invested and mentored me was equally important.
Yeah, that's special. How did you end up at Colorado State, all the way from Maine to Colorado State?
You know, I liked the gymnastics coach. We, you know, at the time we did some phone calls and video exchanging of tapes and things like that. But she seemed to be the person I was most attracted to in what I was looking for my next stage of development. And I loved skiing because I grew up skiing. And so I was more interested in going to that kind of a climate than I was to Texas or, you know, somewhere south, because I wanted to continue skiing. The campus was gorgeous. Fort Collins, Colorado is a beautiful place to be. And so all the pieces sort of fell in place for that to be the right choice for me. And it was.
Yeah. So you enjoyed college, I assume. You competed as an athlete, a student athlete. Sports management, event plan, was that all part of the plan all along? Is that what you went to college to do?
Yeah. And I wasn't sure, you know, the major was very new then. Now every university has sports management as a major. At the time, it was a new major. And so it was called commercial sports management. And so I went into that major not even with fully understanding the curriculum, but once I was in it, I absolutely loved it. And it really was organizing things. I love puzzles. Ever since I was a little girl, I've been a puzzle person. And so I pictured all of these events, and I still do that to this day. Every little piece of the puzzle matters, and each piece has to intersect with the other piece to have this beautiful picture in the end. And so event management became a big part of that for me, piecing all these puzzles together. And so that's the degree I graduated with. I work in a field that I actually got a degree in, which isn't always common these days.
Right. So really, your career started, your college career, and then your professional career, just as this sports event, sports management, kind of wave was beginning to form. Because I know the Indiana Sports Corporation, I believe, was 1979, I think, was the first sports, local sports organization of its kind in the country. Now there are hundreds.
That's
so
right.
You really were on the front end of that.
Yes. And again, I sort of go back to standing up. I graduated from college and I went to work at the United States Olympic Committee, which is in Colorado Springs. And I was working there when a delegation of Indianapolis people came out to Colorado Springs to do a presentation on the National Sports Festival and different events that Indianapolis was bidding on. And Ted Boehm was in that group, Sandy Knapp, and I can't remember who else, but they came in and did this presentation that I actually was able to sit in on. And I was, you know, starry-eyed, like, these people are great. And they were so enthusiastic and were effusive in their praise for what Indianapolis was trying to build. And that was 1982. You know, they weren't there yet, though. They said, this is our vision. This is our plan. We need the U.S. Olympic Committee to work with us and help us connect with the different national governing bodies to get events. So after that presentation, I met Sandy, and, she was larger than life and a female in sports, which was not common at the time. Very well spoken. And again, enthusiastic. And I visited with her and she said, you know, if you don't have a family and you're ready to pick up and move, you should come to Indianapolis. And I thought, well, that's odd that she would say that. But then I started thinking about it. And then within a year, I moved here with a job with USA Gymnastics. They had a position open. They had just moved here from Texas. And it was all part of the Lilly Endowment moving organizations to Indianapolis. So that's how I got here.
Yeah. Well, talk about that. Those early days in Indianapolis, the formative years of the amateur sports movement. You mentioned USA Gymnastics and a number of other national governing bodies that moved here. So Indianapolis was, you know, they were rolling and get it, you know, National Sports Festival, ultimately the Pan Am Games, these local organizations that were moving here. What were those early days like?
You know what? They were a blast because a whole bunch of young people moved here from different places in the country when these jobs opened, and maybe four or five people from Colorado Springs as well came to work at USA Diving or USA Synchronized Swimming. So, we were all in a new city. None of us knew anybody. And again, Sandy was a great hostess, and she connected a lot of us with Sports Corporation staff and was relentless in her pursuit of us wanting to love this city and continuing to say, you know, what can I do to help you? You know, how can I make you love this city more? And, you know, this was prior to the Hoosier Dome and prior to the Circle Center Mall and all these other things. But the city was so welcoming. And I felt, you know, it was so much like Maine to me, where people were so nice and welcoming and helpful. So I loved it. I worked at USA Gymnastics 12 or 13 years before I moved to the Sports Corporation. But, you know, the city, that was a big boom in the city. The Dome got built during that time. Lots of hotels, you know, the Embassy Suites, the Hyatt, lots and lots of infrastructure was being built and put together to be able to host all these events. And so I loved being, you know, in the front row seat watching all that.
Yeah. And then professional sports. Obviously, we've had the Pacers for a long time, but the Colts arrived, and that added a different dynamic as well, and added yet more to the downtown development and redevelopment. Then there was the NCAA, which certainly at the time, I thought, wow, what a crowning achievement to get the NCAA to locate its headquarters here.
You know, I was a part of that bid, and that was one of the things I was the most proudest to have been a part of. Jack Swarbrick led that, who's the current athletic director at Notre Dame. Jack truly was brilliant and amazing. And I had worked with him on a number of projects since I had moved to Indianapolis. And he shined, I don't know the right word here. He was amazing in putting that bid together and working with the NCAA to relocate them here. And it's been a wonderful thing for the city. You know, we wouldn't have had the Final Four we just had all rounds of the tournament if we hadn't developed that relationship with the NCAA and moved them here.
Yeah. Final Fours. Obviously, there are a lot of folks in the media, national media, who have said on numerous occasions, hey, if there's one place to host a Final Four, it should be in Indianapolis. So the city has really kind of created the formula for hosting the Final Fours. But, you know, it's still a very, very competitive deal out there. And I assume from a local standpoint, Indianapolis has to continue to, I don't want to say reinvent itself, but has to continue to remain relevant and on top of its game.
That is exactly right. There's nothing about this city that would sort of sit back and say, well, you know, the NCAA is here, so we should keep getting it. It is very competitive and very aggressive. And the Sports Corp and the city continue to lean in and say, we still want to be the best. We don't want to just be a host. We want to be the best host. And we want to continue to be that outlier that everybody wants to come here to really experience the Final Four. You know, we have been cutting edge in leading events and how we put them together forever, starting with the athlete's needs first. And then building out from that. And, you know, the first people that started saying we were doing an incredible job with the Final Four were the teams. And they were saying, we've never seen anything like how these people are treating us and what they're, you know, they're giving us a game room and they're doing this and they're doing that, which is, you know, somewhat standard now. But if you get the athletes, no matter what sport it is, championing you, just like Michael Phelps always said, the best events in the country happen in Indianapolis. And when you have someone like Michael Phelps saying that, Final Four athletes saying that, then you know you've really come of age.
Allison, talk about the Super Bowl, because there are a lot of people, if you would have said, certainly in those early days, but even maybe a decade ago, or that's been a while now, I guess, so 2 decades ago, that Indianapolis would host a Super Bowl, they say, no way. There's no way Indianapolis could do that. And Indianapolis not only did it, but pulled it off in spectacular fashion. Talk about what that was like. First of all, the bid process and going through it, what that was like.
You know, the bid process for both the 11, when we bid for 11 and then we bid for 12, it is a ton of work. It is a remarkable amount of work and strategy and execution. And it was a great growing period for me. I walked alongside Fred Glass for the 11 bid, who was the chairman of the CIB, and then Jack Swarbrick, who was our chair for the second one, along with Mark Miles. It was fascinating to sort of get in and under what makes the NFL tick and all the owners, and then the strategizing on how you're actually going to be able to win the bid. Because you can do the best, you know, the best submissions in the world, but you've got to have the right strategy on what are your key things that are going to make all those 32 owners raise their hand and say Indianapolis. It was a lot of work, but it was great. It was so fun when we won the second time. It was joyful.
How about from a creative standpoint? I'm always amazed that Indianapolis can make these events unique. The Super Bowl Village, had not been done before. Now it's part of the bid process, right? For the NFL, that's what they want. And it started here. The zip line, who comes up with those ideas?
Well, we did in all different brainstorming sessions, because we wanted to take advantage of what our city is. We aren't Dallas. We don't want to be Dallas. We're not Miami. We don't want to be Miami. So what do we have that we can really use as strengths? And it started with our compact downtown. And then what are the crazy things we can do to keep people energized and get national media talking about us? So the zip line was one of those things. That the NFL was very nervous about the Super Bowl Village. They had never had an urban core before and invited everybody to it. They had been pushing people out in Arizona and in Florida. So wherever they had been trying to spread people out. And we're standing here saying, no, pull everybody together. And then they ended up loving it. So that took some sales punches for us to get them to agree. But it was one of the best parts of it.
Do you think Indy will have to decide to bid on it? But do you think Indy will host another Super Bowl in the future?
I hope so. Yeah. I don't know. It's few and far between on the winter cities. So they have to come up exactly right. And you're competing now against, you know, Minnesota and any other stadiums that are north that become domed. So the competition is tough. It's not like you're a warm weather climate. So I'm hopeful that we'd have another Super Bowl, but I don't know the answer.
And it's not an easy decision because it takes time and money to just to bet on it, right?
Right, right. Yeah, it takes about a year of planning and dedication, and it does take, you know, some financial backing to pull the bid together. So we'll see. I will say that the Colts were amazing partners for us with the city and the host committee, working with the bid, working with the NFL to make sure we were prepared and ready. So hats off to Jim Irsay and Pete Ward. They were great.
Yeah. I want to ask you, too, because I think it was during, as I think back on this, was during the Super Bowl bid process that your husband, Tom, had health issues, right? It was a very serious. Was that during, while you were right in the midst of the bid process?
Yeah, it was on the bid for 2018. So it happened in 2014. And so we had just come off the Super Bowl and life was good. And then he got this crazy virus that we don't even know where he picked it up, and he almost died. But it was in the middle of the bid process for the 2018 Super Bowl. And so it was a challenging walk for a journey for me and for him in that period. But the staff at the Sports Corp and our board, they surrounded me and protected me and helped me through that whole period. So I will always be grateful for that.
Well, so great support obviously was very important. But in times like that, you know, people wonder how you pull through when you have so much on your plate, you know, professionally, but also personally and as a mother, all those things. How do you compartmentalize to get through that?
You know what? I'm always a person who takes care of others my whole life. But in that instance, for the first time, I let everybody take care of me. And people moved into my house and paid my bills and, you know, took care of our dog and answered my emails. I turned my whole email over to Susan Boffman. And so it was a growth period for me because I let people actually take care of me and help me through that part so that I could focus on Tom and make sure he was going to survive and, you know, get him back on his feet in that process. And, I remember sitting in the hospital on the floor, calling Jack Swarbrick and saying, this is what's happening and this is where I am. And I need you to help me, which I've never said to anybody, really. I'll need you to help me write the executive summary to submit to the NFL in the next 2 days. And he said, done. And he was at Notre Dame. He put everything on hold and did it for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was great.
You've done so many things in the sports world, philanthropically. You've been so engaged. I know you're coming off of a really incredible fundraising campaign here in the community. As you look back, and it's always unfair, I think, to ask someone, you know, what they're most proud of, but because there are so many things you could perhaps point to. But as you think back on the events you've been so keenly involved with and some of the other things, is there one thing or maybe a couple of things that you point to as, wow, I'm really, that's a really special thing or things that I've done?
From an event perspective, there's probably a couple that stand out. Building the first temporary pool for the World Swimming Championships in an NBA basketball venue in 2003.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Wow.
Because the whole world said it can't be done, and Indianapolis did it. Second, the Super Bowl, because the city had built, you know, 30 years of reputation on executing that and doing it well. And it took the whole city, not just me. And that, you know, that was certainly something to be proud of. And then, you know, the 100th running of the Indy 500 was very special. Civically for me, probably the thing that I have that I'm the most proud of is the Wheeler Mission Women and Children's Center. This last 3 years has just gone through a fundraising campaign and expansion that I chaired. And I just opened and we were able to move in homeless women and children just a couple of weeks ago. So I'm proud of that because, you know what, our city is better than having homeless women and children. And so it was important to me to make a difference with the homeless community, particularly coming out of COVID. And our city is better than having children on the streets.
Yeah. So what's next? All eyes or all attention, your focus very soon on the Indianapolis 500, I assume, and again, great to have full capacity at IMS.
Yeah, we're so excited about 2022 because Roger Penske bought the company January 6th of 2020. And then 6 weeks later, the whole world changed. So Roger has not seen from an ownership perspective and a management leadership perspective, he has not seen the Indy 500 at full clip here with concerts and fans and everything. So we are so excited about May to be able to show him the whole package, the whole puzzle all together. So we're really looking forward to that.
Yeah. Hey, and you reminded me, I didn't ask you, but I did want to ask you before we leave. What's it like working for Roger Penske? I mean, the guy, in the times I've interviewed him and been around him, and obviously many other people have this opinion, he's just an amazing guy in terms of his energy level, his attention to detail, and all those kinds of things. What's it like working for him?
Remarkable is the only word I can use. He is brilliant. He is a steady, involved leader that is, you know, he's here 2 or 3 days a week. We see him all the time. He's got the office next to mine. And he loves this place. He loves everything about racing. And he is an inspirational leader. So I will always feel grateful that I got the opportunity to walk alongside him, especially in COVID, because he was such a good, steady leader throughout a lot of turmoil. And I love working for Roger Penske. It's been great.
Allison Melancton, the Senior VP for Penske Entertainment, and such an amazing driver in the sports movement and in the community here in Indianapolis and for the state of Indiana. Allison, thank you really very much for taking the time to join us on the podcast. And again, thank you for all you do, you continue to do for Indianapolis and Indiana, and hope to see you soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
All right. And thank you for joining us on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast, presented by PNC. It is a weekly conversation with achievers in business, sports, entertainment, and beyond. And you can download it at Apple or wherever you find your podcast. You can also go to insideindianabusiness.com and click on the link to download the podcast and also get business news 24/7. Thanks for joining us. I'm Gary Dick. We'll see you next time.